I'm KJ, and welcome to the Midwest Bias Podcast. As you can probably tell right out of the gate here, my audio stinks to high heaven. This is because my microphone finally died on me. And you'll notice it in the Midwest Guest Co-Host segment and in our Guest Expert segment. It's pretty much for the entire episode. So I will have to replace that microphone. So I do apologize for the poor audio on my end. Everyone else had pretty good audio. So I'm going to keep this short. I was going to introduce a new segment here, but not going to do that with this poor audio. So I'm just going to read two more Apple Podcast reviews. Thank you again for doing that. Our ratings are climbing as well. Thank you for giving 5 stars. I appreciate it. And thanks for taking the time to write these. So the first one comes from Adadiah. My guess on that, I think, is a good one, and that's Bob Walsh. 5 stars, titled, Awesome Job. Not content to merely recreate a version of the wildly popular Speaking of Tangents, KJO is to be commended for executing a well-conceived concept for this new podcast. Midwest Bias includes a healthy dose of Minnesota, but also brings in guests from around the country who discuss local customs, foods, and dialects in a laid-back and most certainly unbiased way. Here's the deal. Will you like Midwest Bias? You betcha. Thank you very much, Bob. I appreciate that. And the other one, I don't know who it is. If you want to fess up, GD Big Daves, or if you want to remain anonymous, that's fine with me. Thank you for the review. Title, great podcast, 5 stars, Jesus Wept. Thanks to you both. You and you get a name drop.
It's the name drop of the week.
The other quick thing here is I was fact-checked by my mama. She corrected me for something I said last week when we were talking with Sean Morrissey. I said that my parents had traveled to Morocco, but then took a boat to Greece for a few nights. It was actually while they were visiting Turkey that they went to Greece. So if anyone listening was wondering, they did what? And thinking the geography seemed kind of off with that? Well, that's because it was off. And that's not what happened. Morocco was a separate trip entirely. So I will say thank you to Mama. Okay, that's enough out of me, especially with this bad audio. On to the Midwest Guest Co-Host.
Time for the Midwest Guest Co-Host. She's the best co-host of the day. Yeah, it's the Midwest Guest Co-Host. Yeah, you betcha she'll know just what to say.
Okay, yes, it is time for some questions with our Midwest Guest Co-Host. Please welcome, from the great Midwestern state of Nebraska, Jolene Wojcik.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Do you agree with that? Do you agree? First of all, if you don't agree that Nebraska's in the Midwest, we might have to just end the conversation.
Oh, no. We're absolutely in the Midwest.
Okay. All right. And this could be interesting. Do you have anything to add to Simeon Copeland's question from last week about any misconceptions of the Midwest or Midwesterners? We already have established that Nebraska is clearly in the Midwest. Did you have anything to add to that conversation about Simeon's question?
I think one misconception of the Midwest is that we're all stuck here, that we live here because we have to and we don't choose to, don't you think?
And can't get out.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I think that is, at least from my point of view and from me personally, having thought these thoughts, I think that of sort of Tornado Alley, like Oklahoma and Kansas, and I suppose Nebraska is one of the states that's, you know, Tornado Alley. Is that considered Tornado Alley? Is that a little south of you?
More south, but yeah, we have our fair share of tornado warnings here.
Yeah, so I've caught myself saying, why don't they leave? But it's just, and it's the same thing here. You know, people will say, God, it's so cold there, or whatever, there's nothing to do there. Why do they leave? Yeah. Well, we don't leave specifically because we really like it. So I get what you're saying there.
Yeah, we like it here. It's a great place to raise a family and strong work ethic and change of seasons, all those good things. So we're not stuck here.
No, we're not stuck here. That's a good one. Thank you. Okay, let's get to
these questions. The first one reads, "Hello, experts. There is a Northeast," and then he adds in parentheses, "the best, a Northwest, a Southeast, a Southwest. Why isn't there a Mideast? Could identifying an area as the Mideast help define a truer Hall of Famer-like Midwest? I'll hang up and listen. Sully from Boston. Never revere." How'd I do with that last part? Maybe I should just wait to see what Sully says. Better let Sully weigh in on that. I tried. Never revere.
That was good.
Thanks. What do you think?
When I hear Mideast, I hear Middle East. So now I'm thinking of the Middle East, you know, Iran, mm-hmm. Afghanistan, you know, sand dunes, camels, you know. And so if there was a big, you know, groundswell that, yes, let's have a Mideast, fine. But I can't see that happening.
I can't see it happening, but I do think it's a good point, especially for someone like the Hall of Famer. I think that might help her definition of this. So if I have the map in front of me of the U.S., and I guess what the Mideast would probably be would be Illinois, Indiana. I think then you could, and even for me, I think I could widen my definition and put in all of Indiana and all of Ohio into that Mideast. And sure. I suppose I would move. And this might be met with some resistance. I can think of a few Michiganders, but I think that might have me putting Michigan in the Mideast.
Yeah.
And then Midwest would be half of Illinois, the western part of Illinois, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, northern half of Kansas, northern half of Missouri. I forgot to say North Dakota, South Dakota, and Nebraska. Only the eastern three quarters of those states. Does that include Grand Island?
We are right in the middle of Nebraska. I just don't think we're ever going to get a Mideast for anybody to really call it a Mideast, because you're going to think of the Middle East.
It's never going to be that way yet, because they are going to think of Middle East. First of all, he did call us experts. So, I mean, I think he's got that confused with the next segment, which is our guest expert segment. But you know what? We're all experts in something. So I'll take it. I'll take the title expert. Thanks, Sully. The first question he asked, though, was why isn't there a Mideast? And I can't answer that. I guess maybe you answered it, Jolene, because it sounds too much like the Middle East, and the Middle East was named first.
I think so.
The second question is from Ed Butt. He actually has two, it's a two-part question. The first part, when counting items for the express lane, 10 items or less, do 3 cans of cream of mushroom soup, and then he adds in parentheses, for your casserole, count as 1 item or 3?
Oh, that's easy, don't you think? It's 3. You got to scan each one.
Yeah. It's almost like Ed knew you were going to be the Midwest guest co-host for this kind of a question. This seems like a Jolie. This seems like tailor-made, what would Jolene do question.
Yes, it's 3 items.
And I might surprise you, Jolene. I agree.
Oh, good.
It's 3 items. But would you say like at Costco, if it's a box of 6 bulk cream of mushroom soups together, all bundled together? Then it's 1 item.
Correct. Yep.
So it's all in the packaging.
Yep. It's how many times you have to scan, I think. So 3 cans, 3 scans, 3 items.
3 cans, 3 scans. Yes, I agree. And there's really no debate about it.
I don't think so.
And the second part of Ed's question is, what, if anything, do you say or do if someone in the express lane has half again as many items as allowed? I'm interested to hear what Nebraskans might say or do in that situation.
Well, I'm kind of an impatient person, but unless they have a really full shopping cart, I'm probably not going to say anything. I'll probably just sit there. And you know what I will do, though? I'll probably sit there and count the number of items that they have in their cart. That way I can go home and say, can you believe somebody had 35 items when they went through the express lane?
You'll go home and stew. See, that sounds like, you know, what I would do. And it's that, you know, it's that, I know passive aggressive has a negative connotation and most of the time it is, but that's what I would do. I would maybe glare at the person, but again, I'm not going to do this if there's 11 items. But like you said, if it's a pretty full shopping cart with 35 items, I'll probably just sit there and look at them, but I won't say anything, more than likely. But then I may go home later and say, can you believe? You never know. I always think about what might happen to me if I say something here. How big of a deal is this? Will this person like start yelling at me and follow me home? You know, yeah. Is it worth it? So I always weigh my pros and cons.
Sure.
And usually it ends up with me not saying a word.
Yeah, that's how I am too. But you know what's also annoying to me is like you're in that express lane and you have a bunch of coupons, or you're writing out a check really slowly, or you want cigarettes and they're only in the regular aisles. So then it's like, okay, not only did you come in the express lane, you're doing things that are not express.
Yes. Right. When you hit that express lane, you better be ready to go.
Yeah. You know, I probably wouldn't say anything either. But it's interesting because something that's kind of similar would be like, if I'm in line though, at a concession stand at a ball game or something, mm-hmm. and somebody, you know, someone will come up and stand right next to you. And then they kind of walk up with you, like they're going to order before you. Then I do stop them and say in the nicest possible way, you know, I was here first. Thank you very much. But I
don't
know
why. Do you add the thank you very much part?
No.
I do that. I will speak up if someone's trying to cut. I will. But it is, like you said, the very nicest possible way.
Yeah. And so that's kind of similar, but, and I don't know why, but if someone's trying to butt in line, boy, I'm not going to let them.
Yeah. Again, you're weighing the pros and cons, and that hamburger is important. 35 items in the cart ahead of me, and not so much, but don't come between me and my hamburger.
Or veggie burger.
Yeah, right. Although I'm not getting veggie burgers at concession stands at the ballpark. I made that mistake once at AT&T Park in San Francisco, California, you know, with their veggie burgers at the ballpark. It was not good.
Oh, no. That's too bad.
Yeah.
Well, you learned.
I did learn. I've never done that again. The last question of the day comes from my friend Schultze. Schultze is a friend from college. So it was really good to hear from me and from her. A nice surprise to get a question from her. She and I go way back. So here's her question. What is dinner? She elaborates, is it the midday meal or the last meal of the day? Growing up, lunch was lunch and supper was dinner. In fact, supper and dinner could be used interchangeably. My mother-in-law calls lunch dinner. She is from a very small rural town in middle Wisconsin. I'm from a large city in Wisconsin and had never heard lunch called dinner until I met her, and was very confused when she was asking me what I wanted for dinner when we hadn't even eaten lunch yet. Clearly this is wrong, as we don't have brinner, but instead have brunch. Is this a rural Midwest thing? She also says warsh, but that is for another time. Smiley face emoji. What do you think about this question? What is dinner? Which meal of the day is dinner?
Well, I kind of agree with her. I don't usually use dinner. Lunch is at noon, and supper is your last meal of the day. So I usually say lunch and supper. Don't usually refer to dinner. I think, I don't know if it's really a Midwest thing, but I remember like in the summers growing up, I'd go stay at my cousins and they were farmers. And so lunch was your biggest meal of the day. And sometimes they call that dinner, and then supper is your like lighter meal. So I don't know. That might be why some people use dinner instead of lunch, because it was your biggest meal.
Whether
you took it out to the field or they came in, but it was like the full spread. So
yeah, that's interesting. Do you think that has anything to do with how early in the morning farmers get up? They need the huge meal earlier in the day.
Yeah, they need it at noon.
I mean, that's obviously not having to do what it's called, but It's just, you know, around here, the Hall of Famer and I call the last meal of the day dinner. I guess we do that most of the time because sometimes I say supper, and that's probably when I'm talking to my mom. I know she calls it supper. So I will ask her, like, what did you have for supper? So I will say supper. We use lunch here, lunch and dinner, but also I use supper. Yeah, lunch is definitely the midday. I'm never going to call lunch dinner. And here's the interesting thing to me is I grew up calling it lunch, the midday meal. And I thought that I grew up calling the last meal of the day dinner. But I asked my mom, she says she's always called the last meal of the day supper. And she always called the midday meal dinner, not lunch.
Oh.
And she said she's pretty sure the whole community that she lived in, which was rural North Dakota, said it that way. They all did it that way.
Interesting.
So why do I say lunch and dinner if the woman who raised me said dinner and supper? Because I'm a brat who never listened or what? I mean, why is that? I'm sure my brother says lunch and dinner.
Yeah.
Maybe he says supper.
I would be interested to know if my siblings and I all think of these terms as the same. Because I have two brothers and
sisters.
Well,
we'll have to ask Sandy.
Oh, hang on.
It's the name drop of the week.
Yes. See what she calls lunch or dinner or supper.
Exactly. But my mom also said, she said that lunch, and this might be what you were talking about with the your cousins and the farmers. She said lunch was either something like 10 a.m. or 4 p.m.
Oh.
That's what they called lunch. Like maybe it was like just a little snack.
Well, no, the lunch on the farms, the dinner on the farms at the noon time was a big meal. Big meal.
Okay, so that wasn't the same. So maybe at 10 o'clock, the farmers had a little lunch out in the field.
Yeah, perhaps. And then they came back and had
lunch
dinner.
On the combine. But you know, in the Bible, isn't it called the Last Supper? They don't call it the Last Dinner.
It is called the Last Supper. And we just had that last Thursday, Holy Thursday.
Yeah, and the Last Supper, is that at night? Presumably that's at night, correct?
Yes.
Do we know that?
Yes, because that's when they have the Mass. For Holy Thursday is at night when it occurred. So we do know the Last Supper was at night.
I sure hope that my mom and my dad aren't listening since I'm a pastor's kid and I don't know if the Last Supper was at night or not. The last question is from Todd to Kay. And the question is, did you get enough questions? So yes, Todd, thank you for that question. The answer this week is yes, we did. But again, we need more questions, please. So keep sending them in. I really appreciate it. Okay, Jolene, thank you for coming on with me today. But before we move on to our East Coast expert guest, since it's Masters Week, and since we happen to have you on this week, which is actually a total coincidence, or is it? No, actually, it is a total coincidence. Anyway, since we have you here, I won't ask you to make your pick. Because by the time this episode is posted, we'll be at least, 2 days into the tournament? So I'll just ask you some general Masters questions. I wanted to know, what is the most interesting or weirdest thing that they do there at Augusta that the general public wouldn't know about unless we were there? You know, things that we might not see on TV. Is there anything that you can think of?
Well, I probably just getting on the course and the amount of security that's around. You pull right up to the course, the parking's free. You know, we're usually getting there about 6 a.m. on a Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. Sunday would be a little earlier. And there's all the same security guys are there. They're year after year, and they have their headsets on, and you kind of stand near where you park, and then they get a signal that allows us to go to where the metal detectors are. Then we wait at the metal detectors and more security. And then you go through the metal detectors when they get the signal. And then you probably have, three quarters to a mile walk. So past the golf channel set, past the driving range, past the pro shop, finally, we end up right on the outside of the first fairway. And then they hold us all there again. And the whole time we're walking, you're walking very fast because you can't run. There's just a ton of security saying, slow down, slow down, slow down, because everybody's going super fast. And then we're held again at that spot, and you just kind of catch your breath. So like we might stay in each of those spots a half hour. And then just like a minute or two, just a few minutes before the first tee time, they let us everyone out to the course. It's just kind of crazy how it's just kind of last minute we're let onto the course. And the amount of security, I mean, you would be amazed because you don't see that on TV. You don't see how many of those guys are around.
No, you don't.
It's quite a process to get onto the course.
Well, that we talked about on the Tangents podcast, I'm pretty sure, because we were saying, would you ever chance it by running? Because I know it's a no running rule. And you said, no, they're pretty strict. They will kick you out and you will lose your badge if you run.
Yeah. One time, my husband on a Sunday was heading up to 18. I don't know if he was running. I'm sure he was walking very, very fast, and they stopped him. And the guy had his headset on and he was being told something. Yeah, you got him. You got him. And they thought he was somebody that was really, really running. And Tim was just like, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. And finally the guy said, okay, go ahead. But during that time, 300 people ran past him to get to 18. So they do that too. They don't always kick you out. Sometimes they just hold you and put you in the penalty box for a while.
But you've never been put in the penalty box.
No, I have been scolded plenty to slow down, but I've not been stopped.
So what I think I remember, maybe I'm misremembering it, but I think at one point you told me that there are no cell phones allowed at all, right?
Correct. Yeah.
And so do you just have to leave them in the car? You're not even allowed to bring them on the grounds? Do they search you?
You go through the metal detectors with them. I don't know if they have it set where they would go off, but if you would have it on the course and anybody saw you, I don't think anybody would chance it. You would lose your badge. I've never seen anybody with a cell phone. They have banks of phones throughout the course, usually located by all the concession areas, where you can call anywhere in the world for free. I call
That's
home,
fabulous.
Call wherever. Yep. It's kind of fun to do for someone to get a call from Augusta.
Uh-huh. Does the caller ID say Augusta National?
Yeah, it does.
Cool. And a follow-up to that question, what is the most misleading thing, like visually, that we see on TV that does not do that course justice?
Well, I think most people would say how hilly it is. And it is. It's a really hilly course that you don't get that on TV. I'm always amazed at some of the older players that do a couple practice rounds and then they walk, play a couple days, how they walk those 18 holes, because it is pretty grueling. The other thing that I don't think you get a sense of on TV is how close you can really get to the golfers. I've been to some other tournaments where you're just not as close as you can get at the Masters. So that's why we always like to go to 2 tee box. I mean, you're literally standing right next to them. And so that's just cool. Even on the putting greens too, you're pretty close to where all the action is. So that is just fun to be able to be right next to them.
Oh yeah, definitely. Do they really hand you a piece of paper or something with words or phrases that you're not allowed to say, like dilly dilly or mashed potatoes?
No, you don't get a list.
Okay. I heard that you got a list somewhere.
No, I think I heard that too. What you do get, you get a pairing sheet, and that pairing sheet each day has a little quote from Bobby Jones that talks about the etiquette and decorum that you're supposed to have on a golf course. And then they do have a little line on that because I looked it up, and it's, although cheering and positive patron responses to great play are encouraged, unsolicited or consistent calls from the gallery are prohibited. So you do get a little sheet that has that on there that tells you not to say such silly things like mashed potatoes.
Le cheeserie. Now, I do know that the food there is really cheap because I know we've talked about that. The pimento cheese sandwiches are what, like $2?
No, like
something
a buck,
like that.
$1.50.
That's great, but somehow I doubt the souvenirs are the same. And I know you hit the souvenir tent hard. So I'm wondering, what's the most expensive thing you've ever gotten?
Oh, You know, they have.
I'm not talking about all the alcoholic beverages you rack up while you're there.
No, I don't do that. I don't want to get in trouble. You know, they have a bunch of, you know, jewelry and watches and some high end stuff, but I haven't bought any of that. So, I mean, it's probably boring. I probably just bought a nice jacket for myself, or a nice one for Tim. You know, one of the items that they've had like the last 3 or 4 years is a gnome, and they don't have a lot of those. And so like the first year that they came out, we had a friend that was going on the Monday practice round, and they actually sold out of them on Monday. She was able to get me one. And so because they have that women's amateur tournament and then the chip drive and putt of the kids, and then the practice round, sometimes things are sold out before the tournament people get there on Thursday. So like right now, I think some of the gnomes are up on eBay for like $180, and they probably cost $40-$50, you know, in the pro shop.
And you have one?
Well, I have several of them. Mm-hmm. This year's gnome has his chair and has his sandwich and his badge. So he's really cute. But not $180. Not $180 cute.
No, it has to be, for me, if I'm spending that much money, it has to be something functional that I'm going to wear a lot.
Yeah.
Or something like that, like a jacket.
Yep.
But the gnome, does that serve any functional purpose? Do you put it in the garden?
You could. I just had my Christmas one out on by the fireplace.
Okay. So a little decoration.
Yeah, decorative.
Okay, now the last question I wanted to ask you. From your time with us on Speaking of Tangents, and from just right now, we talked about this too. I know what you do is when they open those gates, you speed walk to the 18th green. You put your chairs down on the green, and then you go somewhere else, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, knowing your takes on, don't bring donuts to a coffee shop.
Yes.
Don't bring your leftover food to a gas station to microwave it if you didn't buy the food there.
Correct.
Don't go to the bathroom at McDonald's if you didn't buy anything there.
Correct.
How is it okay to leave your chair on the 18th green and then not come back for hours?
Well,
how does that fit into the Jolene rules?
The thing is, if someone would like to come up and sit in my chair when I'm not there, they're more than welcome to. In fact, you can do it around the whole course. So like you can sit in anybody's chair. It's just when they come, they're just like, well, that's my chair, and you get up. So really, I put a spot down. If somebody wants to sit in it for a while, they can.
Uh-huh.
And that's just how it works. It's probably the only place that you could do that, right? Nowhere else can you put a chair down and leave it for hours and come back and it's there.
Well, that's what I was going to, correct. That's what I was going to ask, though. Is it an unwritten rule, or is this listed under a Bobby Jones quote?
Yeah, it's an unwritten rule, I think. Everybody just knows it.
Now, we have done that at tournaments. We've put chairs down. And again, following your lead, and it worked. People were sitting in it when we came back, but they gave it up. I just find it amazing. I worried the whole time if our chairs were going to get stolen, but it never happened.
Yeah.
It's got to be part of unwritten golf etiquette.
Exactly. And it's interesting. Usually we stay until the last golfer is through. I mean, you're there. You want to see everybody, unless it's just terribly cold or terribly hot.
Yeah.
And when we leave, you can't believe how many chairs are left. And we asked one time, and they said there is just a pile of them after each day that are just left on the course.
Like they don't take them home?
They don't take them.
So they're donations.
Yep.
Okay. Well, the other question I wonder about is you seem to get the same spot every year. And so what if somebody beats you to your spot? Do they leave it for you? Because they're like, oh no, that's the Wojcik spot.
No, we like to be on 18. We usually are pretty lucky to get a spot up there. I think since we come early, we're there early enough. So I might not have the exact spot I want, but it's going to be somewhere on the 18th green.
Okay. So you've never had to say, you know, like the express line with 3 cans of cream, a mushroom soup, or 35 items in a cart. You've never had to say, that's my spot, move your chair.
No.
Okay, good. Well, I am sorry that you're not going to get to go there this year. I know you weren't selected, but I'm not sorry that I can be texting with you all 4 days about how everybody's doing, because I wouldn't be able to do that when you're at the Masters.
No.
Well, all right. Thank you for answering my curiosities about the Masters. And thank you for coming on as the Midwest guest co-host. And let's bring on our guest expert.
Great. Let's do it.
It's time for a so-called expert to join the show. Probably from the east, west, or southern coast.
Okay, yes, it is time for our guest expert, and joining us all the way from Washington, D.C., bringing that East Coast bias with her, we hope, and fresh off of a taping of ESPN's Pardon the Interruption, let's welcome Bonnie Barco!
What's up, KJ?
How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. It's been way too long since I've gotten to talk to you. And what a crazy year it's been.
What a year it's been. I missed you.
I missed you. I picture you sitting in your office, feet up, and getting it done with a cocktail in your hands. How close am I to that visual?
I don't think I have a cocktail when I'm at the office, but...
okay.
Usually,
yeah, I'm at your office, at your home office.
Oh, I'm actually sitting on the floor. Oh. With my cocktail next to me.
Okay, good. So you do have cocktail.
I do have my cocktail. That was a good idea.
Yes. I'm drinking iced coffee. No cocktail for me.
Oh, God, I can't drink coffee at this hour.
Yeah, well, it doesn't seem to affect me. Jolene, can you drink coffee at night?
Oh, no. 2 cups in the morning and then no more caffeine after that.
What's up, Joe?
How are you?
I'm great. This is fun. Oh, my God. It's like we're having a little cocktail party.
I know. It's
absolutely
great.
Okay, so what we do on this podcast, Bonnie, is we spew our Midwest bias all over the first half of the show. And then we bring on someone from a different part of the country who is an expert in where they live and other things, of course. And we have them tell us about where they live and why they love where they live. Spew their bias in the second half of the show, if you will.
Perfect.
And so I want to know, I know that you are a native Washingtonian.
I am.
And I have been lucky enough to travel to D.C. quite a few times. Jolene, have you ever been to D.C.?
Yes, I worked for the U.S. Treasury Department for 22 years.
Oh, my God.
So I was in D.C. all the time.
Well, where did you live?
I just had to travel there for work.
Wow.
So I stayed in Nebraska and just traveled there. But I didn't know you then. I'm so upset with myself.
I know.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's a fun city.
Well, that's what I want to know about, because I've been there maybe 5 or 6 times now, where I've gotten to spend a good amount of time. And we all know about the great, well-advertised places like the Washington Monument and all the Smithsonian buildings and the archives and the White House and the memorials. But, you know, and you used to be able to tour the Capitol. I don't know if you can do that anymore after the insurrection.
Nope. Nope.
No, that probably will be quite a while before they'll allow that.
They've taken down some of the barriers, but it's
okay.
Not
yet.
Nope.
My first question for you is, what might we not know about DC that we should know? I mean, what makes DC a great place to live for you?
If you are going to go to the Washington Monument, which of course is a wonderful place to go visit, unfortunately you can't go up to the top anymore. But what we did, I was actually there this weekend. And if you do go down there, you lay at the base of the Washington Monument on your back and you put your feet up to this, up the side. And all around the Washington Monument are people laying with their feet up. And not only is it good for your circulation, but it's really fun to just lay there and look up. And there's people from around the globe. And it's kind
of fun. That's so interesting. I was going to ask you that because I saw that on your Instagram and I didn't do that. I've been to the Washington Monument twice now where I went up to the top.
Uh-huh.
I never saw anybody doing that. I thought it was a new trend set by Bonnie Barco.
It might be a new trend, but when I was there this weekend, everyone was laying around. Everybody was fully masked, which was delightful. And there's people from everywhere. There was a little demonstration going on, and there's people you know, it was such beautiful weather that there's people on bikes. And I was standing at a traffic light with my family. And I said, this is just the greatest that there's everybody's masked and there's people from around the globe just hanging out, having a great time. I said, I'd love to know where everybody is from. And the guy on the bike next to me yelled out, Afghanistan. And I'm like, oh my God, that is so fantastic. He heard me. And we had a little fun and we chatted. But there's just people there from everywhere. And there, a lot of people were dressed up in fun costumes. So it might've been some kind of a holiday wherever they are from. So that was quite delightful.
I suppose you see that a lot with all the different people living from all over the, you know, world in DC.
All the time. It's wonderful. Another really neat place though is if you have a chance, the Botanical Garden, which is right at the, pretty much at the base of the Capitol. And if you get a chance to go and smell the corpse flower, that's kind of fun. It only blooms once a year and it smells like something dead. And if you can stand it, you go in and you sniff the corpse flower and it's magnificent looking. It's beautiful, but it just reeks. It stinks.
So how long do you sniff it?
You try to take one sniff and try not to gag.
And I Arlington National Cemetery, I forgot to mention before. That was quite a trip for me when I went there.
Yeah. And it's I don't know if it's open though right now. I think it's actually closed unless you have a funeral. But you know, back when it was open, it's stunning to be there when there's a funeral. I actually used to do some shoots there. I don't even remember who I did them for, but we had some kind of events going on that were really solemn but beautiful events. And it's row after row after row of tombstones, and it's stunning. But it's really beautiful also. And to go by and see the Kennedy grave and Tomb of the Unknowns is a must see.
Yeah, definitely. How about, you know, a lot of people don't think of DC as having open spaces besides like Rock Creek Park. Are there places that, I know you like to bike. Are there places that you go that are not Rock Creek Pike for biking?
Rock Creek Park is wonderful.
Park, yes, not yes. Pike.
It's especially wonderful when they shut it down for cars, which is often, and you can ride up and down the streets and you can go all the way downtown and you can ride on the canal. The canal is fantastic, but you can go from Maryland all the way downtown, all the way to Mount Vernon. The canal is tremendous. And there's plenty of places. There's trails everywhere. So it's a terrific biking city. And back in the day, before the past 4 years, the White House was a really cool place to go because the streets were open. They don't have like scaffolding and barbed wire all around it. Back then, you could go right up to the front of the White House and there'd be street hockey games and you could ride your bike there and children would play. And that was really fun to do. But that hasn't been there for the past 4 years. Across the street from that is a park and there's always a little demonstration going on, which is, you know, part of the wonder of Washington, that you can always have freedom of assembly.
Yep. That's sad, though, to lose all that.
Yeah, hopefully that'll come back soon.
Yeah, I hope so, too. Jolene, do you have any questions about D.C.?
No, I was wondering, Bonnie, have you ever done the monument tour at night where you go around and see them all at night? I did that once, and it was just stunning.
It's tremendous. That's tremendous. And yes. It's really fun. I've been on a couple of those boats I've been on a couple of weddings on the water that go around the monument. So it's really fun wedding.
Cool.
Now, being a DC native, I know that you're a big Mets fan. How did you come to be a Mets fan and not a Nats fan?
I did not grow up with any baseball. Nobody in my family was a baseball fan. And I did not discover it until I got married. And Artie was an insane Mets fan, and he introduced me to the game. So for the past 35 years, I've gotten into it totally, because if you have somebody explain it to you and show you the nuances and the grace and the fabulousness of it, it's hard to appreciate it. And that's when I became a big fan, because it's the best game.
And I agree.
We lived in New York and he was a crazy Mets fan. And so now I'm a crazy Mets fan. My children are as well. And my son is such a fan that when he lived in Israel and he was an Israeli soldier. And while he was training, when the Mets played, it was in the middle of the night for him. And he would sneak off to a bathroom and watch a game on his phone in the bathroom stall.
Wow.
in the
that's
middle
a diehard.
That's a crazy fan. Yeah, that really made us happy. We love that.
Well, we hope that the Mets do better this year than they have done in the last
couple
years.
Oh, they so will. They've already done better. Just what they've done is the new management and the new owner is tremendous.
When they do you have do you like the Nats? Do you cheer for them when the
oh,
Mets
sure.
aren't playing?
Oh, sure.
Okay. So you were pretty pumped up when they won the World Series, I bet.
Oh, yes. I loved it because, first of all, I kind of knew the owners a bit.
Oh, yeah, the Lerners.
The Lerners were members mm-hmm. of my synagogue, for one. My kid went to school with their kid, and so we knew them a bit. You know, I've had conversation with them, and when they showed up, everything changed. Washington needed a team. And it was just so fantastic. They came and they gave it their all. And it was not a baseball city, but it has become a baseball city. And it was because of them. So everybody should be so grateful to them because they pulled this off and they got a great team. And so when they won the World Series, I was in there cheering alongside everybody. I'm sad that it was not my team, but I was so happy that this was happening in my city and everybody was so joyous. And I'm sad though that they didn't get to have, you know.
Yeah, the victory tour. Yeah, that was too bad.
They were totally robbed because that's so fun.
Yes, they were. Okay, so the next question: most everyone who listens to this podcast knows who you are, and that you're the assistant director of the great ESPN program PTI. And for those who want to hear more about the show and your role on that show and some fun, great stories, I would refer them to Speaking to Tangents podcast episodes 66 and 76. But I do want to ask you, how has producing or directing had to adapt during this pandemic? How has that been?
We didn't go to the office for a couple of months right when it hit. And we had to hand off the show to Bristol. And Bristol put it together as best as they could. It was quite a jolt to us. And then we put down really strict protocol for being in the office. So a few of us go in. And the few of us that go in are the control room staff, which I am part of. And the two producers and director, audio, tape, camera people, all of us had to be there so we can get the show back into Washington where it belongs. And of course, Tony's in his attic and Wilbon is either in-house or he's in one of his homes. But we really miss when both boys are there. I mean, there's just nothing like it. And I also miss when our whole staff is there. It's been so lonely and empty, but we're able to get the job done, which is great.
Do you think, you know, Tony's been doing it in the attic for so long. Do you think he's going to get used to just not coming in and that will continue? Or is he... Like, when's he going to be back?
He's already used to it. He is already so used to it. But he has suggested that he might come back in July, but he wants to come back when everyone is vaccinated.
Okay.
And so only then will he come back. So all the crew has to be vaccinated and everybody in the building. And there's not a lot of people in the building because ABC is down to a skeleton crew also, as they have been for the past year. But most of us in the newsroom are fully vaccinated.
And have they changed security since what's happened, you know, what happened on January 6th? Have they changed security all around, like to the ABC building? Can people still come and watch the show someday again? Or is it always going to be locked down?
I imagine one day when we're all safe, we'll have guests again, because we really miss that, because we loved having guests come in. But it's the building was under heavy security because there were so many threats, and they boarded up the whole building, and they boarded up everything downtown was boarded up for a while. A lot of stores went under, restaurants went under, but they finally took off the paneling off of the windows like a week after the attack on the Capitol. And now it's bright and cheery again, but it's just so few people coming in just to get the show done. I mean, I work like 2 hours and then I'm out.
So
it's really crazy.
Are you doing anything from home, or does it all you have to be in studio to do your part of the job?
I mean, I have a Zoom every day where we discuss the show and what goes into the show and what we're going to need. But otherwise, I have to be in there to do my job.
Okay. Yep. Well, I can say that, you know, aside from technical issues like Tony's iPad in the attic sometimes when the big camera's not working, I think you guys have done a marvelous job at keeping it seem, you know, keeping it pretty close to what the old chill was.
You've
like.
No idea. Oh my God. The stuff that's happened is insane. We've had everything fail at once. We've had cameras go kablooey. We've had to make crazy edits as we're live. It's been absolutely nuts. And we are very much longing for the days when everything went smooth.
So how do Tony and Mike deal with that when all that chaos is going on?
Well, the one thing they do really well is they do live. We tape our show, like half an hour before we air it. So if we do have to make changes, we can do it on the fly. But when we do go live, which we have to often, they're really good live.
Yeah.
As we all are, because we're all so sharp when it's live. And they're pretty good. But when we have to redo takes over and over, you know, because of technical issues, they get kind of testy.
Put it nice.
Yeah. That was a good choice of word. You know, we do have an explicit tag on this podcast, so feel free to let her rip.
Yeah, they get pissy.
Yeah, we all can't wait and till it gets back to both guys in studio.
Yeah.
But I know we've all waited a long time for a lot of things, so we can hang in there a little longer.
Yes, we can. And we're grateful to be working, and we're grateful that our show is still on the air.
Yeah. How many weeks were you off completely where you had no show? Was it 2 weeks or was it longer?
I think it was just a couple of weeks. And then we scrambled and got Bristol to run with it. But they had to kind of be trained because it's got a lot going on in our show. But they picked it up and ran with it as best as they could. Some things you could tell were off, like the big finish was never smooth. Because it takes a while to get all that together. And they just, they're such pros up there. They managed to do it almost as well as we did it. And we have our fun set with all our toys and our costumes and all that nonsense that we have.
Which you're basically in charge of a lot of that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. I love that stuff.
You don't have the nickname Bonnie Gets It Done for nothing.
Well, it's so funny because anytime wherever I'm traveling, and if I see something fun, I'm going to buy it because it could be fun on the set. And I remember years ago when we first started out the show, I was in a Home Goods in Maryland and there was a Statue of Liberty. And I saw it. I said, oh my God, I need that for the set. And I bought it right there. And I put it in the passenger side. I had a convertible back then. And I was in the passenger seat of my convertible because that's the only way I could get it to the office. And I drove downtown. And it was really funny because I went under a bridge and I was like nervous that she'd, like an idiot. She's not going to bump the bridge. And she's been on the set ever since. We've never taken her off the set.
Yeah, see, that's great. And of course, Tony Reale donating the leg lamp. Both have never left the set. I'm sure there are other items too that have never left.
A lot of the penguins. I find penguins everywhere, or people send us penguins and I'll put them on the set. Sometimes if like the boys or somebody sends us in a shirt that they want on the statue, I'll put a shirt on the statue or some kind of a jersey or something. I'll put that on the Statue of Liberty to show it off, just, you know, for giggles.
Yeah. And this, speaking of tangents, t-shirt has been on that Statue of Liberty.
That's right. Oh my God, I remember that. Yeah. I forgot.
And when this podcast gets a t-shirt, or if this podcast gets a t-shirt, I might be sending one. Yeah.
Absolutely. You got it.
So, you know, we talked about expertise, and I would say that one of your expertise is storytelling. Again, episode 66 and 76 of SOT. Well, Jolene and I have some random fun questions, and I should mention that my boys Brad Weiss and John Fitzpatrick helped me with these questions. Oh, hang on.
It's the name drop of the week.
Oh my God, this here comes trouble.
So the first question is, how do you manage to bring up how many Emmys you've won in casual conversation?
Oh, I have no problem doing that at all. We have, oh my God, we've won so many. I think we've won like a dozen now. Oh, wait, no, maybe we haven't.
Really?
No, we have three.
I know your house is adorned in Emmys between you and Artie.
Right, Artie's won a lot. Artie's won a lot more than me, but we have three. We've been nominated, I think, six or seven times, but we've won three times, which is so tremendous.
Yes.
And
how fun were those ceremonies?
Oh, we're so proud of it. And I got to be at one of the ceremonies, which was tremendous. And I brought heads on sticks of Tony and Mike in case we won. And then we won. And I ran down the aisle with Tony and Mike's heads on sticks.
Oh my gosh.
That's fantastic.
I love it.
I'm such an idiot. I actually did that. And it was like, I don't get embarrassed easily.
I bet people loved it.
Yeah, that's fun. But yeah, it's always so fun to win because it means that everybody likes the show, and that's great.
Yeah. And I should put in here before we go on to the next question. Jolene got a shout out for Mr. Tony not long ago.
Yes.
And I'm wondering what role you played in that.
Oh my God. I played 100% of the role. Come on. Are you kidding? Uh-huh.
We figured.
My girls absolutely deserve it.
Oh, that was great.
I've been trying to get a birthday shout out for years, but you know, your show doesn't tape around my birthday, which is always Thanksgiving
right.
week.
Right.
And so one of these days it'll fall.
One of these days we'll work something out. Meanwhile, Anita from Alaska got a 60th.
I know. Right. That was awesome.
That was tremendous. I wrote that on my calendar and I had it for months until it finally came up. And I said to Tony, make sure you give a shout out to Anita from Alaska. And he did. That was great.
Yeah. No, I couldn't believe it. That was crazy. Thank you so much.
Okay. Next question. What's the craziest Ted Turner story you can say publicly?
Oh God, there were so many.
Now this goes back to your days at CNN in Atlanta.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Cause I was there when we first started, and Ted Turner would come into the newsroom wearing his bathrobe because his office was upstairs in the building at Techwood Drive. And he would literally come into the newsroom when we're 24 hours a day. So we're on the air and he's wandering in his bathroom, which was hysterical. And back then we would let him go on camera and do these little editorial things where he would just speak his mind. But we stopped doing that very quickly. He was so fun. He had the, not the World Cup. He had the, what's the one for yachting?
America's Cup.
America's Cup. Thank you. He had the America's Cup. He won it several times, I think. And he had that in his office. And one day he was going to make an appearance on CNN and talk about the America's Cup. And I ran up to his office to get it. And we had so much fun with it while we're up in his office. We put, I think we put alcohol in it and we drank out of it. So we can say that we drank out of the America's Cup, which was ridiculous.
That's fabulous.
His pilot. He had this pilot who drove a DeLorean and she flew his private plane. And I used to hang out with her and I got to hear some really great stories, but he was something else. Did you know that I believe he owns most of the land in New Mexico and he uses it only to graze animals and you cannot develop it in any way. It's only for grazing. I'm like, whoa, that's pretty cool of him.
Yeah.
That's really cool because he's a Montana guy. I think that's where he lives, or where he lived part of the year anyway. I did not know about New Mexico.
Yeah, he bought all of the land just to graze. So there's sheep and cows grazing all over New Mexico. I thought that was kind of nifty. Good for him. Yeah.
Absolutely, it was. And I mean, he was married to Jane Fonda for how many years? And so anybody married to Jane Fonda has got to be a pretty cool dude.
I think they're still very close.
I think they are. Yeah.
She goes and visits him.
Boy, does she look good. Talk about a shout out. Oh, she ought to get a shout out when she's like 83 years old.
She's amazing. Like she looks tremendous. I want her plastic surgeon.
Jolene, do you have a question for Bonnie?
I do. So you and I have shared some photos about this, but who's the coolest person you've met at the White House Correspondents' Dinner? And then maybe the strangest person too.
Oh, easily George Clooney. I dug that because he's a dish.
a dish.
That was very old school. Very fun meeting him. Oh my God, I should drag out the book. I have so many pictures. I'm shameless when I met that. And it's embarrassing, but not really, because I'll go up to anybody and ask for a picture. I just have to, because that's what they're there for, kind of. And everybody's doing it. So I go up and I ask them so politely and so kindly if they would mind taking a picture with me. And I get my selfie real quick and I thank them profusely. and say that I'll never, ever bother them again. The worst person that I ever took my picture with was, I think, Colin Powell. That was my fault. Colin Powell did not like to be touched, and I touched him, and he snarled at me, which I...
Really?
I'm so sorry.
Queen of England, though.
No, but he needs his security detail, and he didn't have it there.
Sure.
And that made him angry, so I apologize. But I did get a picture, which was very nice. Joan Rivers was tremendous, and you name a famous person, I've got Kim Kardashian. I got Pamela Anderson. I think she was on her third set of boobs. Tremendous picture. Tremendous picture. Let's see, Serena. Everybody went to that party. It was like the hottest party, and I just went up shamelessly and invited myself into everybody's space. So, got pictures with everybody.
So do you have these all scrapbooked, or are they in frames?
I got a million pictures. What's funny is whenever somebody dies, I post their picture with me and say, oh, I'm so sad, because I had a moment with them and they were wonderful. And but I get to, you know, put that picture on my Facebook page or wherever the hell I put it, Twitter, because they were kind to me. They were all kind to me.
A lot of people do that when someone dies. They post a picture of time that they were spent with them as a memory.
One of the coolest was I got Aretha Franklin.
Ooh.
Ooh.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
A lot of times I was with Tony, and that's a lot of the ways that I would get to them, because I would grab Tony and bring him in so I could get a picture with him, and then I'd snag one myself, because Tony wouldn't walk up to them. So I was like his advance woman.
Yeah.
And I'd go and I'd grab the famous person. The funniest one was Larry David, because he and Tony look alike. Mm-hmm. Up close, they look like, the picture I have of them is just tremendous, because they both look like twinsies. But Tony always says that Larry David couldn't get away from him fast enough. But I was there, and that's not true. He was very pleasant, and he chatted with him for a while.
I think they seem so much alike, those two.
Yeah. Oh, they are.
Yeah.
Totally. And Tony was terrific. Whenever he's with these famous people, he's so charming, and he's a lot of fun. And that's why I loved running around with him, snapping pictures of him with famous people.
And you weren't shy at all.
No. No, that's not a place to be shy. That's definitely not the place.
Don't you think, Jolene, we need to ask Bonnie the question that we talked about earlier before Bonnie came on, about if someone was in the express lane at a grocery store and it's 10 items or less, and they have more than the 10 items.
Yeah.
First of all, do you get upset? Second of all, do you say anything?
Yeah, do you say anything to them?
No, I don't. No, that's
okay.
No, I'm not going to shame somebody.
Well, then you agreed with both of us.
No, yes. Definitely not.
Yep.
I might give them a little stink eye, but I won't say anything.
Yeah, that's what I said. I might glare at them a little bit, but I won't say anything.
Nope.
Okay, and the last question that I have here is, how did you meet the smartest man in Washington?
Oh, we've been friends for years. I've spent every Passover with him for the past 15 years. Where I was at his home this past weekend and the previous weekend. We are close. We met him in our synagogue. He's a sweetheart. His wife is a love. They're very philanthropic. They're very, very fun to hang out with. And they're like some of our closest friends. And he's this high-powered lawyer. And she's also a high-powered lawyer. She works for Human Rights Campaign.
Oh.
And they're just, they're really smart and really fun. And we love hanging out with them.
I met him very briefly at the second Jingle Fest when everybody came.
Oh, yeah.
Tony and he was just very, very kind. I mean, I'm sure he didn't know who I was from, Adam, but.
He was tickled to be there.
I could absolutely tell.
Delighted.
And if anybody doesn't know who we're talking about, because there are people that listen that probably don't know, we're talking about Abby Lowell.
Really, really good guy.
Okay, so you said you met him at the synagogue.
Yeah, he's a leader in the synagogue, and he's a leader in a lot of things around town. He's very well known, and he's a good soul, and his wife is tremendous.
Well, if they're friends with the Burkos, they must have a good soul. Do we have any more questions?
Well, Bonnie, I was wondering, you have a little granddaughter, right? Can you tell us about her?
I do. I would love to. Her name is Lila. She is about, I think, 15 months.
Ah.
She's a little doll. And we try to hang out. We drive up to, she lives in Westchester. So we drive up to Westchester and go play with her. And they came down this weekend for the first time in a year, which was tremendous.
Fun.
And I just can't get enough of her. And anybody who has grandkids is very, very happy. I know John Fitz has one.
Yes, he does.
Yes.
Yeah.
He adores that kid.
It's hard on everyone, but I think it's been really hard on grandparents.
Yes.
And also just, you know, somebody with an older parent, it's been tough.
Right. I saw my 87-year-old mother.
Yes.
A couple weeks ago, I went to Florida.
Florida, yeah.
May I change the subject?
Yes, change the subject.
KJ, how is the Hall of Famer? How is that hot little minky Hall of Famer?
She's good. She's good. She's teaching. She's teaching in school now, all students. No virtual school anymore here.
No kidding.
No, not for her elementary school. She teaches third grade this year. They pulled her out of the physical education class. That's what she's credentialed for, is physical education. But this year, they, instead of having the specialist teachers, physical education, music and art, and I think even library, all of those students, they didn't want the specialist to have to see all the students in the school. So they pulled those jobs and paired them up with classroom teachers. So she has sort of an emergency license.
How great is it for her to be back? She must love being back.
She loves being back. She's been back for quite a while with her students, but they're starting to now bring the older grades away from sort of a hybrid model of online a few days a week and in person a few days a week. They're starting to bring all of them back now. So hopefully that goes okay. But yeah, she loves it, and she loves being a third grade teacher. I don't think she misses physical education all that much. And I don't think you know that she's going to school to be a principal. So that will be, finishing that pretty soon. Yeah.
That's a giant move. Well, third grade, though, they're still really sweet and cute at third grade.
Yeah.
She said she sat in as a principal today because the principal there was off, and since she's in school, she can do that and get hours toward observation hours. So she sat in as principal today, and she said that one of her third grade students who never shows emotion or anything came up to her after school and said, "I missed you today."
Oh,
yeah.
She would make a tremendous principal. That's wonderful.
I do think so. Yep. She's well wired for that kind of job.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, she's doing well. So thanks for asking.
And Joe, what's going on that you're not at the Masters?
I know. So I thought there was only going to be like a very few people. Like, so we got a denial letter that I wasn't chosen. And I heard on the radio yesterday, there's like 12,000 people there. So there's, you know, I suppose there's 50, 60,000, maybe on a 70,000 on a normal tournament, but 12,000. So I'm kind of bummed that we didn't get selected.
I am too. So are they going to be masked?
I wonder.
People are going to be pretty close together.
They will be. They'll be sitting around those greens.
Yeah. Oof. All the other tournaments this year have required masks that I've noticed. I mean, not everyone has them on, but they're required. I don't know what the Masters, you know, they sometimes do their own thing there. Well, not sometimes. A lot of the times they do their own thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they could easily enforce masks because they would just have to say, you want to come in, you got to have it on.
There you go. Mm-hmm. That's it. I was in Florida when I visited my mom a couple weeks ago. There's no masks.
Oh,
ooh-wee.
Yeah.
None.
Yeah, I bet.
And bars are packed and restaurants are packed. That was a little weird.
So are you going to go to Nats games this year? Or are you going to stay away? I know you're vaccinated and so is Artie. So maybe how do you feel about that?
If the Mets are in town, we're going to try to go.
Yeah. You went to some spring training games, didn't you, while you were down
in
Florida?
We did. We got to go see the Mets in Port St. Lucie while we were down in Florida. And that was tremendous fun. And they keep you're basically sitting all by yourself. And, you know, there's people around you, but nobody close, which is great. But you can hear everything. You can hear every crack of the bat. You can hear them yelling at each other. And if you heckle or call out something, the whole park hears it. It's so fun. It's really, really fun.
We went for the first time last year, right before everything shut down. And it was so much fun.
It's so fun because everybody there is there for the same team. Everybody's wearing the clothes and they're dancing up and down. Yeah. And it's just like a big flood of love.
Oh, especially
this
year.
And the weather's great. Perfect. Yeah, especially this year. Yeah, because people have been starving for you know, being something in the stands. No more cardboard cutouts, even though
no more cutouts. Know, right.
We like cutouts in the, you know, in PTI, the only place I want to see the cutouts.
But it was kind of fun having the cutouts, and when somebody would like get a home run and the ball would like take down a baby or a dog and they'd say, ooh, the baby gets it in the mug. And that was kind of funny.
Are you going to games, KJ? Are you going to be going?
Our first game's not, we're going to go May 6th. We have tickets. So far, they've only sold tickets through May 6th, I think.
Okay.
They're doing a pretty good job, though, of keeping it safe. I thought so.
I think they are, yeah.
I hope you have a ball.
Thank you. Was that intentional? Bonnie, thanks so much for joining us. We love you.
At any time. And you're all welcome to come and visit when we're safe again. Come and watch the show. And oh God, we want, and you can all stay with me. Everybody can come and stay with me. KJ stayed with me before.
We had a blast.
We had such a nice time.
No, I want to come. I want to come visit the set. I want to come visit you there.
Anytime you want. You are always welcome.
Thank you.
Awesome. We'll have a good time. One day soon.
Yeah. Well, thanks, ladies. I appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
And I think, you know, I think a good Central Standard Time was had by all.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Thanks, y'all, for listening. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Bias Pod. Please email your questions or discussion topics or comments. And remember, we have no show without them, so please email us at midwestbiaspod@gmail.com. Don't forget to subscribe. You can find us almost anywhere you get your podcasts. Also, if you like the podcast, please consider rating it and reviewing it on Apple Podcasts and any other podcast platforms that take reviews. I have never seen any, but that's probably because I listen to Apple Podcasts primarily. And thanks to those of you that have already taken the time to do this. It helps. Somehow, it does. And lastly, please also consider retweeting us and liking us on Twitter to help spread the word about the podcast. We want all the biases. Thank you. I appreciate it, and I appreciate you. Bye now.
I think she was on her third set of boobs.